to give you Jim J. from the LBG in Northeast area.
Our okay, let's go, Jim.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jimbo, and I'm an addict. I think this is going to be weird because I can't really see a lot of people. I really like to connect whenever I share. It makes me a little more comfortable. I know a lot of people here. I'm excited about that. You know, I worried. I'd been here a couple years ago for a PI workshop, and whenever I was asked to do this, and did they fuck that up? It was a... No, sorry. But I guess there was a lady... I mean, someone called me, like 2 months ago and said, hey, Laurel Mountain Islands wants to know if you'll be the speaker Friday night. And I went like... No, he didn't say Friday night. He said up at their thing. He said it'll be a main speaker. And I went like, well, sure. When is it? He said, I don't know. Sometime in August. And I said, well, all right. Well, obviously, you don't got the information I need. Dave... If I knew your last name, I would say that too. But, you know, so I said, hey, you better have somebody call me, you know, and let me know when and where I need to be. And no one called me. So I figured they forgot about me or said he cusses too much. Or he, you know, tells war stories. And, you know, I figured it was gone. And someone came up to me in my home group at our anniversary and said, hey, you ready to kick it? Friday. Fuck you mean Friday? Spiritual, what Friday? Like this Friday? And they're like, oh no, don't worry, it's next week. And I'm weird because I like to prepare for these things. I get excited. I mean, I prepare, I think, in an effort to feel like I'm prepared, because the one I say at home and the one I say here are completely different sharing sessions. You know, and for those of you guys that know me, it's pretty much going to be the same thing. Because I don't have two. You know what I mean? I got one story, one thing that brought me here. You know, hey, and another thing. About Chuck just said all that nice stuff about coming to my home group. He was looking for some new meeting. And I was so riveting. He never came back to my damn home group. Up here lying. But Chuck held my hand through this. You know, I finally, he called me and we got the ball rolling. So I made it here. I'm happy to be here because I've seen a lot of people that I know, and I didn't expect that. And I was worried about that. I'm thinking, man, I'm going to go up here. Don't nobody know me. But I got some true friends. You know, before I left, Chuck said he loved me just now. That's big stuff. I'm meeting new people up here. I just met a guy named Gary. We're in that hot-ass cabin up there together. And there's only like three people in there. You know, and I went and I said, hey, this is my roommate. And I hugged him. You know, we introduced each other. He's from Meadville. And, you know, I said, what you doing tonight? You know, he said, man, I'm going to that speaker meeting. And I said, man, I heard they got a real good speaker. I'm recruiting. I was worried because I'm like, the people I came up with, they all got like 16 years, 15, 20 years. Yeah, like, I went up there a little bit ago. They said, hey, so how'd it go? They didn't even know it was a speaker meeting. So obviously they ain't coming tonight. But here it goes. I was born and raised in New Kensington, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. I grew up, my mom was a junkie. And when I say junkie, I mean, I love my mother. With all my heart. I love my mom struggled. And I love her. But I won't call her an addict because she don't call herself an addict. That's my way of getting a little jab at her anyway. She's a junkie. My father was shot and killed 3 days before my 7th birthday. You know, so I pretty much grew up, you know, without a father. And like I always say, please don't feel sorry for me about that. You know, through the end of this, you'll see that my story is a story of hope. I've got no reason to complain right now. Life is good because of Narcotics Anonymous. And plus, I've used that as my manipulation tactic my whole damn life. You know, I grew up, you know, If you was a junkie and you try to raise a child, you know they ain't always with you. If you don't lose them because of your dumbass actions, they act up on their own and go away and get put away. So I sort of grew up from the time my dad died. I think I cried and I did my little flip out, so she put me in counseling. And my whole life it's been some type of institution. There's been some type of therapist, and then I'm getting in trouble and I'm going to some type of boys' home, after school programs. So all through, whenever I was probably about 12 years old, whenever I started that going away. I'm sure I had all kind of issues. I wasn't always a drug addict, or maybe I was. It depends on how you feel about that one. But I first got high when I was 8 years old on my way to third grade, and I found a bag of weed. For the old heads, it was a manila envelope. Yep. And it had tarps in it, some matches. And the house I grew up in, it wasn't nothing. It was nothing for one of my uncles or someone at my house to hand you a joint and say, go light this for me, Jimbo. And then I'd light it and bring it back. But I never really thought about getting high until I found it on my own. And I remember being with a buddy, and apparently I had watched them because I spun a joint. And I spun it, and I remember saying, Brendan, we can get high. And he looked at me and said, I ain't smoking that. You're crazy. And now for a kid who struggled with an identity, you look at me, I ain't black and I ain't white. I'm somewhere, a little bit of both. But I never liked black or white people on any given day. Swear to goodness. And I grew up in the projects. My best friend was white. And it was kind of weird because it was a love hate. I remember I wanted an afro so fucking bad. And I couldn't get one. But everybody black in where I lived, they would come up and stroke my hair and say, you got that good hair. Because my mom never cut the shit. So I had this long, raggedy-ass hair, but everyone liked it but me. Because on a Monday, I wanted an afro. Tuesday, I wanted to part my hair like my brother could. Put tonic in it and shit. I thought that Dean Martin look was nice. And I never could do that, so I struggled. I don't know what the hell I am if I can't be in your color gang. And that moment, that boy said, man, you crazy. I ain't smoking that. I swear, gears kicked. I said, that's it. I'll be the crazy one.
Oh, wow.
From that point on, I swear, I grew up in a caste. In addition to them institutions, my ass was constantly broke because I like to climb drain pipes and jump off of shit into the river. Anything, if there was something to do, I did it first. So it was the natural progression for me whenever we started getting exposed to drugs and alcohol. Because when I was 8 years old, I can't say that, I didn't run the streets from 8 years old and, I wasn't a junkie. No, I had a pretty, other than my mom, other than my sister raising me, I would say we was pretty normal. Well, not we. Me, because my mom and them was fucked up. But I mean, I don't have many regrets. As far as missing a childhood, I didn't really do that. I did grow up quick, and I probably knew things that most kids shouldn't know. But I don't have any. I don't have many regrets to me. I did through the childhood. I'm going to try to get through this quick because, like I said, I know a lot of people here, and I don't want to say the same thing. You don't know me. So I can lie. You wouldn't know a damn difference. But I, through childhood, I suffered, probably every bit of abuse that you can imagine. With someone that gets high in the house, it drags other people into your house. And, I've been physically, verbally abused, which I don't think was that bad. Sexually abused, and it's wonderful in Narcotics Anonymous, because I'll talk about sexual abuse and I'll talk about willing sexual participation whenever I do this. A lot of you guys, what I found out in Narcotics Anonymous, though, You know, I came in here and I went, like, there's certain shit that's going to happen. I don't give a fuck what step five my ass. I ain't telling nobody. Because you will think something's wrong with me. But then you come to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, you find out shit, like everybody. Everybody. This shit is commonplace with us. And I'll tell you what, that was freeing for me. The most freeing part of it was, one, you know, when I got up to that point, you know, I did my fourth step with my sponsor, and a lot of people where I live, we go to this monastery. So I went to the monastery. I said, I'll tell this little monk. He don't got no fucking friends. You know? He don't know me. And I told him, and I was crying, you know, like that, and I'm waiting for him to... I was adding shit, too. Like, I was trying to make it hard. Like, he recommended therapy. Ain't that fucked up? You supposed to tell me everything going to be all right. But in regards to some sexual stuff, you know, he explained it to me like this. And I want to share it with you just because if you struggle with it, it freed me. Where I lived, like I said, I grew up in the project. And there was no need to cross the street where I lived. There was everything you needed. I mean, if you were hungry, there was a place to eat. You could buy pops. And I mean, there was something going on. And in that one block radius, that was the world to me. I had seen nothing else. There were other kids that suffered the same things I suffered. I knew about it. We didn't talk about it. But it was normal. And as far as a 6-7-year-old goes, that's part of growing up. That's part of being a man. Now, it's hard to think that as an adult. It's hard for me to go like, well, God, you know, no, it wasn't. But at 7 years old, it probably was. That was the world to me. You know, at 7 years old, my son thought I really should have been a fucking president. He thought I could play in the NFL. He thought I could be in Major League Baseball and a rock star, too. He really believed that. But that was his world. You know, the biggest man in his life was the man in his house. And those are the things that happened in my house. You know, so that's what I knew. And I got to tell you that it freed me big time. Needless to say, I started... I fucked with the mic, Chuck. We got to keep it right so you get the tape. So I grew up fast. And, you know, by the time I was in high school, junior high school, getting high was becoming a priority. And I think I'm pretty prototypical in a sense where I experimented with the gateway drugs and I progressed my way through high school. You know, but from the very start, you know, from probably 13, 14, I knew that I had a big badass problem with running out of things. A big badass problem with anything. I mean, not even just drugs, fucking Tootsie Rolls. I didn't like fun to end. I wanted to go all night, you know, and forever. Halloween all year long. Till Easter. Because you get ham with that. But, so, you know, in and out, blah, blah, blah. I did graduate high school. I graduated, you know, day late, dollar short. I was buying liquor for people in high school. Legally. Yeah, I flunked a couple times. Because I was stupid. You know, and I don't think it was stupid. Not stupid in a sense like my intellect was something wrong with it, but stupid because I made stupid ass decisions. You know, and even today I still have a tendency to be stupid. But I did graduate high school. It wasn't long after high school that I was introduced to cocaine. And you know, some lady asked me if I could sell coke, and I wasn't really versed in cocaine. But I, of course, I said, hell yeah, I can sell cocaine. You know, and growing up with that old Scarface bullshit, you know, don't get high off your own supply, ghetto boys. I knew the rules and loved to break them. You know, from day one, that girl gave me a package, I got high. You know, for some reason, I actually made money. But it wasn't long after that I went to jail. I went to jail for indecent assault, innocent. And it, to that point in my life, I had never been innocent of nothing. You know, I know damn well that I was guilty of far worse than that. But I, but some girl picked my name out, picked my face out of yearbook and said I tried to rip her shirt off, and I went to jail. And I have to be honest, I didn't do like hard time jail. Like, I'm not up here telling you I'm like this hardened criminal. My ass did like 4.5 months, but it was enough for me to say that I'm a fucking convict. And you should fear that. That's always hard. If I speak, when I speak in institutions, like pull that shit at Western Penitentiary. I could go to Oakmont and say that shit. So I've been to jail 4 months. And they go like, oh shit, he did 4 months. So I didn't do a lot of hard time, and I came out, and like jail wasn't, I wasn't penitent, you know, because like I said, I was honestly innocent, you know. But I also know today that that resentment that I carried, you know, going like, look, I'm black today. I got convicted because I was black. 12 jurors of my peers. There was no black people, no half-breeds, no Mexicans. There was nothing. It was all white people, and they got me with that white girl. So I was resentful for a lot of years, and Narcotics Anonymous lifted that. Narcotics Anonymous said, well, goddamn, at that point, you 19 years old, I could have been, should have been, convicted of what? Attempted murder, indecent assault. Hell, I should have been convicted of rape, because I know the rule, no means no. But there are times I've been that close to it, and y'all said no. And guys can relate, ain't no fucking no that close. Let me put the tip in. That's some stupid shit to say. Yeah, you laughing because you've done it. Nasty. Rapist. But it's like it didn't fix me when I was in jail, and I knew I had a problem then. You know, like I said, I didn't like things to run out. So when I came out, things got a little worse. I chased cocaine a little bit harder, and I immediately, you know, sniffing wasn't enough for me. You know, I really needed to, like, kick it up a notch, like Emerald. So I did, you know, and I tried hiding it, but it never worked. And ultimately, you know, I ran and ran and ran and ran. I don't remember the times whenever it was about smoking crack and going to the club or smoking crack and calling a girl. Like, from the beginning, I was fucked up. I tweaked. I was that guy that you said, man, we got to get rid of him. That's a dude. Why don't you quit telling us to shut up? I walked around the whole time going, shh, shh, shh. You hear that? Get off the floor, Jimbo. Huh. Jimbo, there ain't no fucking ghosts in there. Because I had that problem. And if you can relate with me, I got paranoid to a point where, quite honestly, there were fucking imaginary ghosts. 3 of them specifically. Then apparently got high with me because they stole from me. And every door I came into, if it was a car door, house door, I would crack it, and I would slide through, and I would slam that motherfucker. And I would think they couldn't have got in. They couldn't have got in. And once I went in the bathroom, did what I had to do, I'd come out, and the motherfuckers was there. They was there somehow. And I remember looking, I'd look at a door, and the door would be shut, you know, like wide open. And I said, that skinny motherfucker's behind that door. And I would be looking in the crack. He could see me now. He just wants me to get up. And I would walk over to that door, and I would plan my attack. I would grab the thing. I was like, get this motherfucker. Yeah! And I would open up the door, and I'd say, God damn, he's fast. He's fast. It never occurred to me that this is going on in your head. It never occurred to me. Some therapists, some rehabs, they say, oh, they got their little classification. You know, this is a stimulant. This is a sedative. This is a hallucinogenic. And cocaine's under the stimulant. That motherfucker's under all three. It's under all three. Because it made me crazy, and it did make me see things. You know, it made me believe things that were happening that weren't happening. And this is probably, I mean, I was doing this in 1989, at that paranoid, that nutball stuff, you know, where people didn't want to get high with me when I had those. And that fucked up. Because I would get high with anybody if I didn't have no money. But, and the point I'm making here is I never had a good time. It was miserable for me. You know, miserable from the very first one. And in my big run, like, I swear to goodness, like, I ran, like, I never was one of them under the bridge. I know some of y'all was grimy and dirty. I always washed. That was one of my tics. But I thought I needed a shower all the time. And it seemed like I always had some place to crash at night. Like, I never was homeless, living in a box. But my street running, my hustling, it lasted, you know, it was like a little bit more than a summer. Yeah, that ain't shit, is it? That was my running. Every other time from that, I was like your... I don't want to say weekend warrior, because we know if you go out, if you get out like me, sometimes it lasts a little longer than the weekend. But I was that guy. You know, I somehow managed to get married and have kids, and I had a job. And all I knew is, I mean, when I got paid, I would leave. I would just leave, you know, and that's just what it was. I would say, honey, I'm going to get a pack of cigarettes. Yep, and then I wouldn't even buy no cigarettes. And then I'd be gone. You know, I'd pick a fight with my wife. I thought I was the smartest guy in the world with that one. I said, I'm gonna call her fat. She'll say, get the fuck out. Then it'd be her fault. Those are my tactics. So it never was fun, but I continued to do it. And even with that space in between, the space in between where I go like, God damn, I'm whooped again. I don't got no money. She's on me. She's leaving. She's leaving. She's staying. She's leaving. She's stabbing me and shit and fucking throwing shit at me. And I would think like, man, that shit, I'm crazy. Why would I want to do that? And then if I got money, I would do it again. That's when they talk about this disease being baffling. You know, what the hell was I thinking? To this day, I don't get it. And I don't even need to know. I don't need a therapist to tell me that it was fucking stupid to do. You know, I can see that now, and I'm so glad, because I can't say today that I've lost the desire to use. You know, quite frankly, when I hear y'all say it with 6 months clean, 1 year, I don't even want to get high no more. You fucking liar. Because if you got the same disease I got, it makes you think sometimes. And I don't mean, like, you know, it's not... I remember having a week clean. I remember it vividly. I remember having that choice and going, like, what do I do? I mean, I really wanted to get high. You know, luckily I had a sponsor. I had people around me that told me how to get through those hard times. And each time, you hear that, what's it, Nietzsche? Tom, you here?
I'm here.
What's that guy named? Nietzsche?
What?
Nietzsche? That which does not kill us makes us stronger.
Friedrich Nietzsche.
Friedrich Nietzsche. He said Friedrich like he's fucking from his country. I call him Fred. Fred says... And in a lot of instances, it's a stupid saying, you know, because it doesn't apply to everything. I don't think anything is that absolute... But for that, it did, because when I made it through those, and knowing, I would really think, like, my stomach, my guts was going to pop out through my belly button. That's how they turned, and I really wanted to get high. But each time I said no, it was less the next time. You know, so this, my clean date is 9-2 of 98. I have 9 years in a little over a week. I was wondering what took y'all so long to clap. Last year I forgot it. And I forget anniversaries. I still do that with my wife, and I forget my wife's clean date. I suck at that kind of stuff. But she forgot mine last year. That was the greatest thing that could have happened to our relationship. That evened the score right there. But the bad thing about it was I forgot about it, too. Okay, miserable, crack, shaking, slow motion. That was another thing. I moved in slow motion. And then I came to a meeting. You know, and for me, it wasn't just come to a meeting. I went to a detox, and that's where I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And from the moment I went there, I realized that this ain't the place for me at this time in my life. Fucking crybabies. God damn. You know, and they had AA in there. You know, I'm like, what the fuck? You drank. You ever suck a dick? For a shot? They obviously couldn't say yeah. And I mean, but when I make fun, when I poke fun, I get stupid. And I often say things for just the sake of shock value. And I don't mean it, and I put my foot in my mouth. So, well, let me put my... I didn't even give my disclaimer. I'm probably going to cuss. And I don't believe I'm trying to be profound. I'm not trying to be cool when I do it. I just do it. I'm comfortable swearing. You know, quite honestly, I don't want to make an excuse. Because I've heard so many people go up here, well, the reason I do this... And Khalees had that good one. He said, look, you think you offended in here? You need to turn around and look what chased your ass the fuck in here. I don't buy that. I just cuss. And I'm opinionated. You know, I'm self-righteous in that sense that what worked for me in this program can work for you. You know, I am also open, and I'm saying this to the old-timer, that other ways do work. I know that. You know, I'm sure of that. So, I know that you can't graft a new idea onto a closed mind. And so I do get mad whenever, you know, people, whenever there's one way to do it, goddammit. You know, the one thing I know is don't get high. Everything else, the way we develop in this program, the way we take the asshole out of ourselves, the way we work these steps to become a better person, it's up in the air. There ain't one way of doing it. Of course, my way is probably the best. It's the most efficient. And at times, I make fun of your way and call it stupid and say it don't make sense. You know, but the change I know is going to happen, and I accept that. You know, I do have a problem. Whenever we always say, like, do y'all say the we version of the Serenity Prayer? And there's somebody in here right now just said there ain't no wee version. Yes, there is. I heard it at my home group. And it's that fucking simple. It's that simple. I heard it. Change is going to happen. All because they changed a couple words don't make it a bad thing. It's just a different thing. I know that today. You know, because quite honestly, when I first heard it, I said, hold on. That ain't the version. But change is going to happen. And then I'll probably say more bad stuff about the old-timer and newcomer. I forget where I was at. I was going to say something funny. Okay, I'm in recovery, ain't I? Did I make it to that far? My first meeting, and it sucked. And I left. So I got out of that program. But I did go to a couple meetings because I was going out with this girl. This girl was 6 foot tall. wide hips, and with a flat belly. Not to say it's wrong with a little bit, but she got a little bit. But and she smelled real good, and I was always a sucker for that, for all that perfume. Probably hiding something, but I liked her. I really liked her. So she was like, she was serious. She was getting clean. I said, well, fuck, I'm going to the meetings too. And so I got pseudo clean. You know, because I, like I said, I really didn't relate. You know, I know when I came here, I don't want to say I wasn't ready. You know, a lot of people, I wasn't ready at that time. I was ready whenever I wanted to be ready. I just didn't want it. I just really, I think I was more comfortable in that misery. You know, this change, this trying to be a good guy shit wasn't for me at that moment in my life. So I continued to get high. Although I did, and I always tell this story, I did like those, the key tags. You know, I like attention. Every fucking ounce of it. You know, I mean, it's like speaking is almost bad for me because I love to do it. You know, for some reason, there's like a sponsor out there saying, does it feel good? Well, then you shouldn't do that. If it don't hurt, your ass probably ain't growing. But I love those key tags, and I love, you know, I mean, I went up there first day out of rehab. You know, and back then, here's another stupid one, when you tell people to get a fucking white key tag 7 days in a row. I think it's retarded. I think you get one white key tag for one day. And then later on, when you get 30 days, you catch up for a week just to show everybody that the program works. That's how I was taught. Not to say your way is wrong. It's just stupid. Just stupid. And if I couldn't imagine. Yeah, I mean, like especially, like, I relapsed in Narcotics Anonymous. That was a different white key tag. That one sucked. And if my sponsor would have been like, well, you got to do it 6 more days. Fuck N.A. You know what I mean? Really, I ain't going. I wouldn't have done it. No, I probably would have done it, but I talk shit since I didn't. Okay, where was I at now? Okay, but where was I?
Second meeting.
I was at my second meeting. No, yeah, I got the white key tag, and I got like the 30-day key tag. Bear in mind, I only had like 60 hours clean. But I loved them. I would stand up, you know, and say, 60 days? Yeah. Got 60 days. Like lining up, hugging me, clapping. This is the shit. And one of them key tags, I'm still hanging around chasing this girl, and I was out one night. And I had a thing with the women of the night. And I don't know if it was because, you know, many of us have a history, like, hanging around a fucking idiot. Like, pretty girl hang out with a chubby girl, make herself feel a little better. Because I had that bad. If I hang around you and you ain't got more, you dumber, or you don't got as much money. You know, and it, somehow it made me, I didn't have to do nothing to feel good. All I had to do was hang around you. That shit's still, that's alive and well in these rooms.
That's right.
But I had a thing for women of the night, and I don't know if I just liked them that much because they weren't that pretty where I live. They still ain't. And I still look at them. But I was with this girl, you know, and then whatever you do with the woman of the night, we did. And the next day I was getting one of them tags. And I wouldn't know when, if I'm tricking, goddammit, we're getting high. So we got high. And it is luck would have it, she chose this as the day to get clean. It was like on my 60 day or something. And like, I'm sitting in the meeting, you know, and they're doing the readings, and I'm looking at her, and I'm like, fuck. It's like, what do you do in this situation? But pride got the best of my ass. You know what I mean? I really, they was like 30, 60 days. I stood up. And I just thinking, gritting my teeth. I said, you better not fucking stand up. Because I thought she was going to stand up and say, no. He was getting high with me last night. Digging on the fucking ground. Thinking his wife was coming. That's why I was just so afraid. And she didn't. And I got my 60-day tag and never came back. You know, for a couple more years. And that was my history. You know, and it might not have been a couple of years because I had a thing. Like I said, I had a wife at home. So my ass, I would go on one of them runs, and if it was like one day too long, if I could stay out for 2 days, but if I stayed out for three, then she was kicking me out. I come and my shit was on the porch. And I would say, no, honey, I'm going to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And they'd be, you're louder than them. Let them talk. Let them talk. You ain't going to shut them up. Okay, but I'm in the rehab, and I'm mad at everybody. Okay, whatever the hell. But, you know, I said, I'm going to be one of them people. And I came out, and from that moment on, it was N.A. Ranger time. And I must tell you that I went to Staples, and I got a fucking briefcase and a pen. Okay. You remember that? Getting involved in service. I need a pen. Not no book. Not no big pen. I want one of them high-dollar pens. I'm going to spend like $8 on this motherfucker. And it's going to write good policies and shit. And I did that. And I came to meetings and I took notes. And I love speakers, so I would go see any speaker, and I would take notes, and I would say, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that. And I love speakers that were, like, violent and war stories. And it's funny. Like, war stories are funny to me because I think many of us, they're described differently. You know what I mean? We define them differently. You know, I go, most of my stories got fucking horrible endings. So somehow that qualifies as that not a war story. But I've been told, you know, somebody said, okay, I ain't going to see Jimbo, man. He tells too many war stories. A guy said that to me. I know, asshole. Asshole. I swear I ain't seen him in one of my leads either. And I respect it in certain ways. Fuck, I forgot again. But I came to Narcotics Anonymous, and I was on fire. I was on fire for 88 days, and then a series of events happened, and I got mad, and I used. And I truly believe 88 days was like the longest I've had since I was a kid. And I thought 88 days, like your brain fixes itself. Like, I'm not going to get paranoid anymore. Like, it's progressive. They wasn't lying. Because one hit, and I was right back at it, right where I left off. 88 days, and you know how I feel about them tags. So this one hurt. It hurt a lot. And for the first time in my life, my sponsor, I'm used to going home. Like I said, my wife stabbed me, beat me with wiffle ball bat in front of people. It was always violent. You know, my mom was throwing shit. Like, everyone hated me whenever I was getting clean. And I called my sponsor. You know, I was only gone for one day, but it felt like 1 year. And, you know, when I had nothing, bank accounts dry, did nothing at all, no gas in my van, and I called my sponsor, and I said, I fucked up, man. You know, and he went like, oh, I know, I heard. You want to come up? What do you mean? Are you going to let me in your house? You condition I'm in. And, you know, he welcomed me in there. You know, I went to my sponsor's house, and him and his wife sat down at the table with me. She offered me a big plate of chicken and stuffing and shit, but I was smoking crack, so the thought was nice, but I wasn't hungry. I thanked her for the chicken, and we talked about the next step. What do we do now? You know, he said, well, you got to, one, try to get a place to sleep because you ain't staying here. And you got to get back to meetings. You got to get back on bigger on the thing and run. And so that's what I did. You know, he called, got my wife somehow to let me back in. And I went back. That was September 1st of 1998, you know, and then I made it here. From that point on, I don't want to say I didn't take it seriously, because those 88 days I had, I'm telling you, I really loved this program. I believed in this program. I made a mistake, and it cost me a clean day. But my alcohol clean date is June 6th. I heard somebody say that before, that they had two different clean dates. You got one clean date. That's another thing. You got one fucking home group. Newcomers. Newcomers coming here all addicted. don't have no coke or heroin no more, and all of a sudden they one home group ain't enough. And they know what's best for them. I don't know how many times I've been through that with sponsees. You know, I go like, for real. I mean, like, you got one sponsor, right? One home group. What one program. It seems like everything come in one. But all of a sudden, it ain't enough for you. Just like crack wasn't enough for you. One hit. No, I need seven for real. Because if I'm busy, I got to go every day of the week. So that's another one of those things that I say. Like, I know people who's done it. You know, I got a sponsor. Sponsee, sitting up there. He did it. And it was funny because I'm sitting there going, for real, I'm telling you. But what can you do when someone's on fire in this program? Say, really, I need it. You just got to wait back until life kick them in the ass and they shutting down meetings and shit. Poor Tom. I love you, man. He was like, no one's coming to the meeting. We're going to have to shut it down. You went from 6 to 5. He said, I'm treasurer on Monday night. I'm GSR on Tuesday. They need a treasurer. I got to drop Wednesday. Then he slowly chiseled down to one meeting a week and called me up and was like, hey, I know what you meant. One meeting a week was probably smart. I could focus my attention there. So like I say, you know, not that it's wrong, it's just stupid. Stupid to have more than one. And I kept going to meetings. I did what my sponsor said. You know, and getting a sponsor for me, I'm the same type of sponsor like that my sponsor is. In a sense where most decisions are based on experience that either he's been through, his sponsor, and most solutions are pretty absolute. What you need to do is first we need to get to the root of the problem. What spiritual principle do you need to apply to this? And then that's what we work on. And it'll get you there. There ain't no fucking crazy voodoo shit with me. You know, I don't believe in that experimenting, you know, like what you need to do. You know, like them crazy paths. You know about going where you want to go to graveyard. You want to say three serenity prayers. Say the ties that bind. Bless yourself, and then burn page 7 of the basic text. And that shit will make everything all right. Next problem comes up, they said, what you need is a gratitude list. You want to include this. You want to afford a 4-step on this. I didn't know. No one ever did that to me. And like I said, please don't take me wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong to do that. Because I know, I'm well aware that people get clean all kind of ways in this program. You know, I just know he never did it to me, so I don't do it. And that's a problem for some people, because people go like, you know, when I sponsor people, like I said, I'm pretty, like, let's just work the steps. It takes a little bit of writing, a lot of living, and a lot of change. And then we move on, you know. It ain't like you write out the book and then you just, I'm on the next step. You know, the steps take some time with us. You know, and I've got it where I've been interrogated. It's where this really don't make sense the way you sponsor me. You know, I heard so-and-so was doing this and doing that. And I'm so glad I had the sponsor that, you know, that has me able to detach myself from that drama. I don't have to be emotionally connected to a problem today. You know, and that includes my sponsorship. I care about the guys I sponsor. I love them. And we develop relationships. I also know that not everyone is meant for everybody else. You know, I mean, there are times when you got to move on. You've got to move on. I do know, like for me, I've been fortunate. I had to move on once because I had a guy that was in the rehab that I picked. You know, for some reason, he was colorful when he spoke. And I went like, fuck, that's the God that I've been looking for. And I chose him, but he didn't go to enough meetings. So I switched. And that's the only time. That was my only thing. You know, I get sad whenever, you know, I see someone jumping from sponsor to sponsor, trying to change everything around them but never changing themselves. And it seems like 9 times out of 10, that's what happens. But it does happen where people just aren't compatible. You know, so the sponsorship thing, I had on lock, man. You guys told me to do that, and I did that. You know, they told me to get involved with service. I told you, I already had a briefcase and a new pen by now. You know, so everything was all right. I learned the hard way in, I learned about commitment in service. I learned that, here's how it was told to me. David Jones, he said, commitment is sticking with the decision you made long after the feeling you made it in has passed. Meaning you was excited when you said, they said, we need a GSR. You was like, I got 90 days. I'll be your GSR. And then football came. Football came. If you bleed black and gold like me, I've been through it. I know when they say, look, we're going to have a party. On Sunday, we're going to watch the black and gold. Bubby Brister. Actually, I ain't been there clean that long. Neil O'Donnell. We're going to watch it, and we're going to have kibasi. We're going to have my wife cooking a ham. We're going to have titties and M&Ms. That's what I heard. Like, everything's going to be fun. Oh, that's right. You got to be an area service. That's where your commitment is tested. That's where we grow when we bite that bullet and go anyway. And I learned that way. And not to say that I ain't lost my position, because I'll be the first one to tell you, I broke down on them ones before. You know, playoffs? Fuck area service. For real. Ain't going to be nobody there anyway. That was my thing. And then someone called me up and said, we didn't have a quorum because you weren't there. All we needed was one guy. But business can't go on. So I know what it is to struggle through commitment, but I also know that Narcotics Anonymous is in dire need of people in service. I think it's our responsibility as sponsors. You know, if we're too lazy, if we make some excuse why our life is too full to give back in, you know, through service, then I think it's our job to get the people we sponsor in service. You know, I don't know if that's everywhere, but I know in Northeast area, we struggle, man. They send out the report, man, and it's just vacant, 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 vacant. All the positions are vacant. Nobody's doing it. You know, and I know as a sponsor, it's hard sometimes for me to say, look, you got to get involved with service, for fear that they might say, well, you ain't involved in no fucking service. But I know it saved my life. And I shouldn't deny them that opportunity. It is hypocritical. But goddammit, we got to do it. You know, I don't go to a meeting every day of the week. But I'll tell a newcomer, goddammit, look, 90 and 90. 90 and 90 is essential to me. I'm a fact man, and I love asking people questions. And that was one of my drills was to go like, hey, did you do a 90 and 90? Did you do a 90 and 90? And the results were overwhelming. Assholes didn't do 90 and 90. People with a lot of clean time did 90 meetings in 90 consecutive days. So, like, to a newcomer, your situation is no different than most people in here. You know, and I can tell you, I've done the math, and you can do it yourself. And I always challenge people. I say, really, if you respect somebody, go ask them. Go ask them, how did they do a 90 and 90? Chances are they're going to say yes. So I encourage you to do that. Narcotics Anonymous has changed my life. I don't have the greatest job in the world. I make decent money. I have to work for a living still. But that's just something that came. I mean, I didn't go to college. I didn't aspire to do that. You know, so I made a bed that I lie in. And I'll tell you what, with Narcotics Anonymous in my corner, Narcotics Anonymous being my cut man, I'm doing damn well. You know, I have a home. I have a home with a swimming pool and cars and a son that got a car. You know, that's big shit. And that's another old time to tell you material things don't mean nothing. They're lying. Take their shit away. Take their shit away. It matters. It's a constant reminder for me. I'm doing okay. I mean, I have to be grateful. I have to notice the things that the average Joe doesn't notice. Just to keep sharpening my gratitude. They're talking about what's this called, alive and free? Isn't that something that everybody takes for granted? You ask my son, they say, man, shoot, you ought to be grateful. You alive and free. I say, well, fuck, I didn't commit no crimes. I'm supposed to be alive and free. You know, for the average Joe, this is something that's just commonplace. We come here and we celebrate. Celebrate. It's good. I'm grateful I'm alive and I'm free. You know, thank God I didn't get what I deserved today. I think I'm trying to close. I've been talking long, huh? Nobody said yeah. Yeah. That's because people from my area ain't here. They'd have been like, hell yeah, shut the fuck up. We heard it before. I'm just, like I said, I can be grateful today. You know, and to come up here and meet people that I don't know, make new friends, and that's one of my things. I like, if you've seen me, I done walked up here like 4 times already. Just walked the road so I could see somebody and go like, hey, how you doing? You know, the speaker meeting's at 9 o'clock. I didn't do that to everybody. But I made new friends, and those will be friends of mine later on in life. We share a common bond that is strong. You know, there are differences in Narcotics Anonymous, but that one, that desire to stay clean, that's the one that's the ties that bind us together. And we keep them stronger than anything that could tear us apart. I don't know how to end it in no fucking cool way. There's a bunch of people with time. I would tell like one of Usman's jokes or something. But they'll be like, you heard that somewhere else. So I'll tell you after, when there's only newcomers around. And, you know, I want to thank Laurel Mountain Highlands Region for having me do this. You know, it's always a great honor for me to do this. And I don't lie. Yeah, I mean, in regards to that. You know, I love doing this. You know me. You know, I sit there, my heart's bumping out of my chest before I come up here. But I tell you what, through the end of the day, I'll be whooped. I'll be tired, spiritually drained, but I know I've grown through it. Because Fred Nietzsche told me it makes me stronger, if you got that. So thank you guys for listening and not getting up and having cell phones ringing and stuff, because that would have offended me. Thank you for listening. I hope you got something out of it, and I truly do love you guys.